I can do all of Gangster's Paradise.
Can you really?
I can do all of the Humpty Dance.
Can you do the hump?
That one? No.
No, let's do the dance, dude.
That's the chicken dance.
Do the hump.
Yeah, that's that one.
I kind of hate all of you right now.
Yeah, do the hump, the hump.
Ugh.
Like, you can't do all of Jam on It or White Lines.
Right. Rapper's Delight or
things that make you go,
Oh, California. I know that one. Good old
I love
Compton.
The fact that none of us are going to do it.
Yeah, we're just like silent.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life. I'm sorry.
That was the whitest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I have impressed many a black man with that. I will have you
Whoa.
Know.
Welcome to Pod Thingy, where the geeks meet over drinks to discuss the latest in pop culture. Join the rock star, the author, the outlaw, and the nerd girl for Pod Thingy.
Hey, what?
In the
welcome to Pod Thingy. This is episode 12. We are coming to you nowhere near live in our secret headquarters.
It's our own personal Batcave.
Yeah. My name is John. I'm here with Tracy.
Hi.
And Blaine.
What up?
And Hayden.
Howdy, partners.
And we are. And welcome to the roundup. We're here drinking with each other, and we're going to talk about some geeky things and take you along for the ride.
Oh, yeah.
The drink of the week this week is something I made up. I'm sure there's probably something very similar to it out there, but it's something I made up, and we're calling it Dawn of the Pod Thingy. So if you'd like to follow along at home, it is a shot of tequila, another shot of pineapple juice, probably a shot of orange juice, maybe half a shot of Chambord, and Sprite.
Except that I saw you pour the tequila, and that is not a shot.
Yes,
but I was going to say, but for you at home,
for
you amateurs at home,
for your moderation to everything,
14 parts tequila.
So
Yeah,
but just, you know, find the in the night. But basically, tequila with orange juice, pineapple juice,
and
Chambord,
cheers.
And Sprite. And we're going to take a drink right now.
Cheers.
Cheers. And this is, I said it wrong 12 times now, Grinks with Deeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, oh, well, I got then. It right.
Grinks with Deeks.
Tsingtao.
So we've got a lot to talk about today. We all went last night to the 4DX Theater in beautiful downtown Los Angeles, and saw Dawn of the Power.
Of the Power.
Dawn of the Power Rangers.
Dawn of the Power Rangers. I would love that.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I think Blaine rubbing his hands kind of threw you off. He was so excited.
He's excited to get to it.
I know.
I think I'm excited too.
Although it bugs me, that title is stupid, but I hate when words are repeated. Like, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, and plus, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but doesn't it feel like a dawn should come before a rise?
Yes.
So that's the other thing that bugs me about
a
little bit.
I kept screwing him. I kept getting him backwards because of that.
I think most people do because I said I went and saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes last night, and somebody was like, oh, I saw that like a couple years ago. I'm like, No.
It's still dawning.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Well, at least it's not crowning.
Yeah.
That's the next one.
That's the third one.
crowning of the Planet of the Apes.
There actually was some crowning in this
there
episode.
Was.
They didn't
was.
Show all of it, luckily.
There was.
So we're going to talk about both the theater experience and the movie itself and kind of everything that's been going on around the Planet of the Apes release. And plus, there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about in the news.
Tons.
So this is something that Hayden sent to me. It's about Chris Columbus is going to be attached to Gremlins and Goonies as, what, a director?
As a director. And I think this is still rumor mill. I don't think this was official.
This wasn't an announcement.
This was not an announcement, but there are talks that he is now, and this is, his works include the first couple Harry Potter movies of recent memory.
And the classic Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire, yes. Drive-by fruiting.
It was actually hard for me to say classic with a straight face. But
you wouldn't consider Mrs. Doubtfire?
It had its moments.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think it's a classic. I think it's stupid that they're making a sequel.
I agree.
No way. Are they really?
Yep.
To Miss Doubtfire?
Yeah.
Shut up.
No, it's really happening.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Wow. So the Gremlins movie is going to, well, both of these movies are sequels in a way. They're not reboots.
Yeah, we've talked about Goonies before, but
they keep calling the Gremlins thing a reboot, but apparently it's possibly more of a sequel now.
The thing I saw said it was, I mean, it's called it a sequel.
Yeah.
Which is weird for studios to actually use the word sequel when you know they all want to reboot everything.
I've heard Zach Galligan talk about it a little bit, like he might be involved.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, nothing official, but...
I would love to see another Gremlins.
So do you think Chris Columbus is the right guy? He's certainly competent, but...
Well, I thought he blew everyone's mind when he came out, when he did the Harry Potter. You know, I'm like... And I mean, maybe that was an easy shot for him because he had such great source material and he really didn't stray far from it.
No, he stuck to it pretty accurately.
Yeah, I think he's an apt...
He's a safe choice.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, very safe.
And family friendly. The first one was kind of a little horror movie.
Was that Robert Zemeckis?
Joe Dante.
Joe Dante.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what that means, though? It means CG Gremlins.
Oh. Okay, and this is where this whole topic goes to shit.
Yeah.
Because you can't. See, I think any filmmaker, and I think Chris Columbus would hopefully have the integrity to go, you can't have two movies with these awesome gremlins who were practical.
They're yeah, totally they practical, pulled it off.
Perfect. And then go to a CGI gremlin. You couldn't do it.
If they used, I'm going to take the other position just for an argument.
Right.
Because you know how I'm not a proponent of the overuse of CG, but there's a lot of stop motion in the original Gremlins. If you go back and watch it, anything with like wide shots of the gremlins from afar,
yep.
A lot of stop motion stuff. You know, if they use the CG to complement real, animatronics or puppetry in the same way that they use the stop motion, I don't know that I'd be horribly opposed to that.
No, that's like watching that Game of Thrones VFX reel. Mm. That's like watching some of, like, Pirates of the Caribbean use CGI. Mm. Like, you don't look at Pirates of the Caribbean, except for the skeletons, and think of it being a CGI-heavy movie. But it is in the best of ways, where it's seamless.
And it's complimentary, too.
And just like the VFX reel for Game of Thrones. I mean, if they did something like that with Gremlins, I would be totally okay with it.
You know, the one movie that I think of when it comes to amazing use of CG in a way that you don't really think about it being CG, but there's no other way you could achieve those effects, is The Dark Knight with Harvey Dent.
Mm,
because
you're
talking about... You know, prior to the advent of CG and being able to do kind of that digital makeup, there's no way that you would be able to take away tissue. You had to add tissue to someone.
Right.
And that was pretty profound. I mean, that was a kind of a revelation for me to see that kind of stuff.
That CG where it doesn't pull you out of the movie.
Right.
You don't think of it being CG. It looks like it could be the best practical ever.
Right.
But it's not.
Can I make one special request for a third Gremlins?
No.
A practical gizmo, but maybe the other Gremlins, if they're going to do CG.
No, because then you can tell.
Yeah, I really like but then again, I'm all about practical Yoda and not, you know, digital.
The digital Yoda.
But what about, I know we're going to talk about it a little later, but what about Planet of the Apes? I mean, my God, when they came up on Caesar, it was very realistic. Well,
and there was a drastic improvement from 1 to 2.
Yeah, there is. But let's also remember that we basically watched a cartoon last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
That was one of my issues with the first one, though, is that it felt cartoony.
Yeah, well,
I didn't feel that last night as much.
No,
you know,
me either.
So, you know, you talk about... Chris Columbus booting Harry Potter, like kind of kickstarting that universe. And, you know, maybe one of the reasons that was very successful is because he did stick to the book and, you know, he wasn't kind of trying to, you know, it was later directors that kind of took chances with the movies and departed from the book stuff a little bit more. And that was always the main criticism, was that it was a little maybe too safe. Do you think he's going to be too safe?
There's no source material.
Right. Well, there is source material because you've got to pay homage or reference. At least you don't want to totally.
It's kind of a clean slate. I mean, it depends on what they write.
Right.
You know,
I mean, in Goonies, that's pretty obvious. You've got one movie to reference, but Gremlins becomes more complicated because you've got two movies. Mm-hmm. And the second one is more or less a satire of the first one.
Yeah, the second movie, they're not really, they don't have to really reference that.
So no.
Do you think they're going to ignore the second movie completely if it is a sequel?
And I wouldn't say they're going to even like ignore it because it's bad, because I love the second
one. Yeah, and which I was surprised that you guys, I found out that you guys loved it, because that was one of my favorite.
No, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think it's brilliant in an exact different way than the first one was brilliant.
You know? A RoboCop satirical kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, I'd heard that that was Joe Dante's way of really sabotaging further sequels. Is to make a satire of the movie,
yeah.
Which he really did, because at that point, where do you go? You know,
it worked.
Yeah,
I think they're going to do a combination of the two.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think they're going to do?
It's going to be a mixture of the kind of horror and the comedy.
Well, the first one was a mixture of horror and comedy.
They went back and said, "Okay, let's just do another Gremlins, change it up, of course, but go back to that scary, funny sort of way." I'd be so happy with that.
Yeah,
it'd be great.
Like the Star Trek reboot. You know, where you're paying homage, but you're kind of making fun of it at the same time.
That's where I said, well, and that's kind of that's the trend. That's the theme of what most of these people want to tackle, as far as that was the success. That's the slate.
Right.
What they deem as rebootable, you know.
Well, I'm also kind of hopeful that because of, we haven't seen it yet, and I don't know if it's going to happen, but we keep getting told that there's going to be way more practical effects in Star Wars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe filmmakers, especially in the genre, are kind of like, you know, waking up to that's what everyone wants to see.
Yeah.
I don't know either,
but it's I think it's certainly the combination of the two is one of the reasons why Jurassic Park still holds up, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you look back at those effects and you're like, wow, this is so much better than some of the stuff that gets churned out today, and we're, you know, so many years down the road, and it's kind of silly, you know. But I think it was the combination of when you're close up, you go practical, and then when you're...
Did you guys see the meme with Steven Spielberg,
yes,
who slaughtered the Triceratops.
Yes. And somebody thought he had actually killed an animal.
It's so great, because it's all because of that the high school girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The high school girl who has gone out and hunted animals, and I fucking hate those. Anytime anybody posts that, it makes me mad that I have to see it. And people took it seriously.
Yeah.
They were actually like, just because he's a big-time director doesn't mean that he can slaughter animals.
Oopsie poopsie.
So, you know, speaking of Harry Potter, sort of, we've got some Harry Potter news recently. Several things.
Weird.
I mean, kind of without warning, J.K. Rowling posted a new Harry Potter story.
Going back to the well.
Yeah, which kind of it felt like she said she was not going to do that.
No, mm-hmm. She's been posting stuff to Pottermore this whole time.
Yeah, but that's the first story with Harry, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's from the perspective of Rita Skeeter, who is like the gossip columnist of the Harry Potter world. Right. And it was kind of implied by a couple of articles that it was kind of a negative thing. But actually, if you read the story, it's not really. I mean, yeah, their hair is thinning and they have extra scars and whatnot. But I mean, for the most part, it was just kind of a snapshot. If you've read any of the books or watched any of the movies, you know to take anything Rita Skeeter says with a grain of salt. Well, so,
boy, I know that. It felt very polarized for me, that people were either like, oh my God, a new Harry Potter story, or please stop with the Harry Potter stories.
I'll take the more the merrier. I love it.
I'm in that state, sort of like I was with Douglas Adams. I had my fill. I don't need any more right now.
Okay.
Potter was kind of an epic series in itself, and it just feels like now she's going for smaller bits and pieces that may just kind of fall like,
Like, I didn't have any desire to run out and read it, you know? I kind of feel like that story's been told, and I'm satisfied.
Maybe she needs another mansion. I don't know.
Well, I don't think she's hurting too bad.
Yeah, well,
yeah. No.
I heard that she fell off the list of billionaires because she gave so much of her money away.
That's cool.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
I didn't get any.
Yeah. No, like, I mean,
yeah,
you're not a charity.
I know,
and I'm not saying
says
that
you
charity case, but
and I'm not saying I disagree with what she's doing. Like, I will probably go read that once I'm like, hey, it's time to read some Harry Potter again.
Yeah,
to put some more context behind it, this is about mythical creatures.
No, this is the one that she did on Pottermore. It's like a news article, like kind of page 6.
Oh, okay. So which is the one with the mythical creatures?
That's a completely different thing. That's a book that she wrote, and now they're taking and making it into a trilogy. She's writing the scripts, which she was not involved in that level with the Harry Potter movies. So I find it kind of fascinating. But it takes place, what, 100 years before the Harry Potter?
Yeah, about that. It's based on the textbook. She kind of released a few of the more popular textbooks that she had mentioned quite a few times, including Terror of Magical Creatures. So that's what this is kind of based on.
Newt Scamander, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that.
just the fact that they're in the same world as Harry Potter, it's going to be this huge thing. J.K. Rowling's writing the script. Is there any way for them to live up to the hype? You know it's going to be there. They're like almost, it's almost an impossible task to make these.
You know what I'm excited about? Because the wizarding world is kind of stuck in 100 years in the past, right? They use quills and ink and things like that, and, you know, brooms, whatever. So I'm interested in seeing what it's like for them to be in kind of a, in the same time period as what they're stuck in. I mean, you look at the Weasley dad, he's fascinated with modern culture, with rubber duckies and subways and things like that, because what are they? I mean, it's like they live in the 1800s. So I'm excited to see what it's like when they're on the same playing field.
I like that. And I think the fan base is varied enough where, as far as popularity is concerned, they're not going to have a problem.
Yeah.
I would say, like, if I was stuck back in Harry Potter world like I was before, even though I have not seen the movies, which was by design, but I think I would be very excited as well, but I'd be a little freaked out. I'd want to temper that.
Yeah.
I see this as kind of going, at least Hollywood, in the movie route, the Hobbit style. They're going to have to make some sort of connection to the main franchise in a way, like drop hints that there's some sort of connection, maybe even though there isn't in the books, but that's going to be the commercial success of
Much like The Hobbit, it should be one movie, not three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you've got J.K. Rowling's crafting the story for the scripts, right? And she successfully told a 7-part story previously. Is there material there? Obviously, she thinks there is, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels, again, like it's you're destined to kind of like when the prequels came out. Even if the prequels, the Star Wars prequels, had been fantastic, it's still, you've got so much hype to live up to, and you know, when you're following up something like that,
yes,
and
it, exactly,
and it, you know, that I've noticed that lately, it, for me, it feels like it's very easy to get like kind of lost in the hype of things, like the, you know. It feels like there's this balance of, you know, are we putting too much out there? Are we spoiling too much of the movie or the TV show? Or, you know, are we building up the anticipation so much that
with
we finally,
all the social media and all the trailers?
Wasn't there a time when a movie got one, maybe two trailers? I mean, you got
maybe,
and
two.
Now it's like, here's the fifth trailer for, right, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever.
Here's the Japanese trailer. And it has a little bit more.
Here's the G-rated Europe. You know,
yeah, here's the red band.
Yeah, it's very odd. And I mean, it's like, you know, so it's, I'm thinking specifically, like, you know, we're not even close to the Mockingjay yet. And we saw a trailer last night, and that was like the third trailer that we've seen for it. And it's like,
I don't really know about a trailer.
I mean, it's a teaser.
A teaser.
Anyway.
That's what I would call it, teaser.
It had Donald Sutherland in it.
But,
so.
I mean, it's...
If you read the book, have any of you guys read the books?
No,
I'm waiting right before the movie.
Okay, if you read the books, it makes more sense, I think.
But okay, but it's not so much whether the teaser makes sense for me; it's the fact that
is it necessary?
When the hell does this movie come out?
No, yeah. That's what I'm saying is that in the realm of the books, like, it makes sense for there to be those pirate transmissions because that's what they were doing in between the second and the third book.
I get it, but I'm saying, like, do we need to see the pirate transmissions already? Like, that movie's not coming out for months and months and months. So I don't know. I'm asking because it just feels like specifically with I'm feeling with Guardians of the Galaxy, and we've talked about this, Blaine and I, is it's like I kind of feel like, all right, you know what? I need to not watch and hear anything more about Guardians of the Galaxy.
And not because it's bad.
No,
it's enjoyable. It's just oversaturation.
Even so much that. It's gotten to the point where I'm so excited about it that now I'm freaked out. I don't want to get any more excited about it because now my expectations and the hype is too high.
Right, it's going to be hard to live up to it. Just recently they released, the third official trailer and fourth? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you count a teaser and, you know, and more than that, if you count that international version that came out.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're talking about a lot of different trailers with a lot of different material. There have been behind-the-scenes featurettes. And then they did that 17-minute footage screening.
Oh, my God.
And so you've got all these people coming out of this screening talking about how...
Dude, like, I almost don't even want to talk about it right now because this gives me goosebumps.
Well, what were they saying? Better than...
No, on par with...
Remind them of Indiana The Empire Jones. Strikes Back and...
Do we have to talk about it?
So, I mean, they said Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is like two of my favorite movies ever.
My expectations just went up again.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
Just
and it's,
sitting here.
For me, it's like, even if I go, no, come on, there's no way. Let's just let it be its own thing. My mind still goes, but Empire and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And now it just went up again.
You
just got so excited.
I just wrote a blog about this, and it's more about internet spoilers and things, how movies have changed and social media and internet's changed what we view. And you know, we used to be like, oh, this movie's coming out, it's a week away,
right?
Like, we had a week's notice, that was it. We had
a couple months notice.
I'm exaggerating, but you know, we had these magazines like Starlog and Cinescape and things that, you know, that gave us little maybe snippets and pictures. But now we've got so much information, it's like we're totally burnt out before the freaking movie comes out,
right?
You know, and I don't know, sometimes it's kind of cool, it builds up hype, and then the other times it's like, by the time you get there, it's like I've already seen it all,
right? And you've got all these directors that are all about, you know, kind of live blogging, live tweeting. Brian Singer's really into that from the set, and he'll tweet pictures. J.J. Abrams have been doing that on Star Wars. The Godzilla director, I know he was doing that, and I know that the reason they're doing it is to get ahead of it,
mm-hmm.
rather than have other people breaking spoilers. They'd rather be
official,
communicating and interacting with the audience. And
well, there's that, and also, you know, again, coming from the music side, there's like it's a standard practice in the music industry of like, the minute someone stops thinking about you, then you're no longer relevant.
Right.
So there's always a strategy and a roadmap behind, okay, every couple of weeks you need to do this to make sure people remember you. And I think movies and pop culture has realized that they can use that roadmap as well, and they have the tools to do stuff through social, and
everyone's competing for your eyeballs. Everyone, everything.
Look, and I know I'm not an industry insider on the music business, and you know, I don't know better than these guys who do this for a living. But at the same time, I go, you need to disappear for a little while.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
you know, like I think about in particular, like Lady Gaga, right? And her last album didn't do very well at all. And I feel like it was because, well, you never left. You never gave us a chance to miss you before you came out with something new, and then it just feels like more of the same.
Well, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, that's, she's got bad people around her, because you know, she's going the way of Michael Jackson, where someone needs to tell her to okay, by the way, your numbers are a little down. Now's when you disappear and come back in 4 years.
Right. My point was, I think there's value in not being in someone's face all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, mm-hmm. and if
agreed.
I think that especially for something like Star Wars, and maybe they realize this because Star Wars isn't going to be at Comic-Con. They've announced that they're not going to do anything for Comic-Con. You mentioned they're not doing anything for Celebration.
Last I heard, they're not doing anything for Celebration.
So maybe they understand that they have a property that they don't need to push in people's faces as overtly as maybe some others, because there's already this geek contingent that's frothing at the mouth for it.
Which is funny, because it bites them in the ass at first. Everyone goes, fuck, but in the long run, does it pay off?
Right,
I think it might.
Yeah, maybe, because you go, oh, I want to know.
Yeah,
because they're not showing me, I want to know.
Yeah, it removes, you've lost the magic when you reveal too much too early on.
I feel like Marvel's skirting the line with that on Guardians.
I don't mind that they're doing it. I'm worried about me. I don't think they're oversaturating anything. I'm worried that I am overhyping myself, because I'm not good at that. You're better at that than I am. When we go to movies when we have conversations about being excited about something, and you're like, yeah, I've been setting my expectations at this level, I'm reeling it in. And I always go, yeah, me too. I don't.
But Blaine, what is causing that? You got to look at what's causing that.
There's a danger when you put something out in people's faces. There's even a danger of kind of going like, hasn't that come out yet? Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
you've been
yeah.
talking about it for
no,
so
no,
long.
I agree with you.
There's this fine line of like, overhyping versus underhyping, and I think that it ties in with what you're talking about, because you get the fans almost.
No, I agree. I totally agree with you 100%, except for I don't think we're there yet with Guardians. I think Guardians is still doing a great job. I'm just more or less worried about my psycho state.
There's one good example of this, and it's not in necessarily the pop culture world, but it's more of technology. You know who does this brilliantly is Apple. A lot of these tech companies, they'll announce something 8 months in advance, and then you don't get it, and everyone's like, oh, that's awesome. And then by the time you get there, it's outdated.
Yeah.
Apple will announce a week or two, and then it's released.
Yeah.
It's out. And their PR and marketing is...
Oh, my God. We're totally an Apple crew, aren't we?
I think, though, for the...
No, I'm not. I'm just saying they do marketing right.
But that's why I can't stand you.
I think the vast majority of people aren't being over-inundated with things, because I think that I mean, as nerds, we tend to seek stuff out. Whereas most people, it's like has to go through a grapevine, and they're only getting bits and pieces.
Us geeks have been trained to do that now.
So it's kind of our fault in a little bit of a way, you know?
I don't know. It feels like, it's just a very fine line. And, one of the ones that feels like maybe they're doing it right is episode 7, you know, because they're just doing a little bit here and there and a picture here and there.
I think they're kind of tongue in cheek, which is pretty cool. There was the whole thing with the Millennium Falcon, right. And then JJ tried to.
Are you talking about when he sent the picture out of from the chess table?
But that was him trying to say, "Hey, I'm really tired of you guys leaking pictures, and the idea that Millennium Falcon is in this movie is ridiculous," or whatever. But it was from the chess table.
Yeah.
So there's that. But then also they just leaked air quotes. Some IMAX footage of desert terrain that's reportedly Tatooine with no information with whatsoever.
When you say they leaked IMAX footage, was it to IMAX theaters
or pictures?
Footage on. Yeah, you can Google it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So they're just. Think they're just playing again? That they're playing the game?
Yep. But it goes to what you're saying.
Yeah.
I still think they're doing a good job, but they're still doing it.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyone else shocked that Abrams isn't doing episode 8 and 9?
He's already burnt out.
My God, I can't believe I am a little bit. I mean, this is like what he's been working towards for his entire life, and now all of a sudden he's just doing the one.
Well,
it's a red flag.
Oh no, don't say that.
I find it interesting that some people have said, "Oh, I never expected he'd do 8 and 9."
I didn't actually.
Yeah. And I kind of did. I don't know why. I guess I shouldn't have made that assumption, but. It felt to me a little sudden, like, you know, that that announcement came and it was kind of like, oh.
He had to get it off his chest or something like that.
Maybe, you know, he's pissed someone off.
Or it goes back, and maybe this is part of their plan. I mean, maybe this is, you know, they're just leaking this information. It's been planned all along. I think it'd be really cool if this trilogy, and this is the Optimus Blaine, the Optimus Star Wars Blaine. I think it'd be really cool if this was directed by 3 different people, just like
wasn't 4, 5, 6 directed by 3 different people?
Yes.
I mean, Twilight was directed by 3 different people.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, if we're gonna talk about classics in the,
but I'm just saying. well played, good sir.
Yes.
No, what I'm saying is that. I think we've become really reliant on the same director doing the whole entire
I want to suck your intelligence.
Trilogy. I think we've become too reliant on that. I think that pretty much, I mean, fuck my life. I'm saying that even the bad movies have 3 different directors.
All right, fair enough.
What I'm trying to say.
Fair enough.
Harry Potter. It's like, I mean, they were switching directors all the time.
Well, Chris Columbus did the first two.
He did the first two, and then there was
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, right. and then it switches, and then it was only until the last 3 that it was the same director.
But I think it was going to go with Chris Columbus until he opted not to do the third one.
I'm saying it didn't used to be that everybody expected the movie to be directed by the same person.
Agreed.
And now do we expect it to be.
Right, and every Bond movie, pretty much, I mean, like a couple in a row are directed by the same person, but for the most part, they're switching it up.
Yeah, and I
get it. And I,
well, as far as Star Wars is concerned, Lucas fucked that up.
Yeah, well, yeah, when he decided to write and direct the first 3 or the prequels.
Yeah.
Do you blame Lord of the Rings and for expecting it to be all under one roof? I mean, like Zack Snyder, they're basically handing over Batman.
No, but you know what? For me, it all comes back to singularity of vision. Like when you're doing something that that requires a cohesive universe, you need singularity. You need somebody who's the visionary. So, you know, in the original Star Wars trilogy, that visionary was Lucas. I mean, that was his brainchild. And even when it was handed off to Irvin Kershner or Richard Marquand,
he was still there.
He was still there, yeah. And he was still running the show. And you know, he was like,
and that's all right.
But it's like, do you want a Christopher Nolan or do you want a Kevin Feige?
Well, but that's the thing, is you've got to have somebody. And so, you know, is that person in Star Wars Kathleen Kennedy? They really were making it seem like JJ was coming in and he's revamping the script and he's retooling the universe, and he just felt very much like he's going to set the tone. And if he's setting the tone, then maybe he's not. You know, I don't know. It just felt weird to me. That's all.
I don't know if I ever got the idea or the feeling that he was going to come in and set the tone. I don't think I ever did. And I don't. That's. I'm not saying that I didn't miss something, or and maybe I should have.
Yeah.
But I never got that. And maybe that's why I'm not so surprised.
Maybe it's because I'm a Trekkie. But I felt like he gave up the whole Star Trek universe for Star Wars, and so I was expecting a bigger commitment.
I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls a Bryan Singer and comes back for Star Trek 4.
Well, maybe he's kind of like the virtual babysitter of the Star Wars series. Maybe he's just overlooking the whole thing.
Well, that's kind of what I expected when they announced that, was it Rian Johnson?
Rian Johnson.
He did Brick, right?
Mm-hmm. And Looper.
Looper, right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's got some sci-fi.
Yeah.
So it feels like, you know, this is somebody who's maybe a pretty cool choice. I mean, I loved Brick. And
again, they're talking about him doing two of them, though, and I don't want him to.
Yeah, I agree with you. But if I really felt like they were going to say, you know, Rian Johnson's the guy, and J.J. Abrams will assume a consultating,
well,
you know.
Well, they did.
I didn't hear that.
See, that's what's weird about this. Mm-hmm. J.J. Abrams was going to be a part of all three of them. He was going to have like a, whether it was an executive producer or whatever.
Like a Joss Whedon-esque role.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. But now he does not. That piece of news to me is a big deal.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
He's out of it completely.
Danger Will Robinson.
Yeah. Something's weird.
Maybe he's going to go back and do another, you know, show like Lost.
Is Joseph Gordon
Do not mention Lost.
Maybe he broke Harrison Ford's leg. Who knows?
Oh. Maybe Harrison Ford doesn't want him back.
Maybe.
Harrison Ford is still laid up in my bathroom.
tied up.
What did he say about Shia LaBeouf?
Oh, that was great. He's a fucking idiot.
That was classic.
I would high-five that bastard.
I want to find that quote. You know, I want to find where he said that.
In context.
I'm sure it was an actual quote from him, but so many times it's like out of context. Because they could have said like, hey, what do you think about Shia LaBeouf doing this thing? And he was like, oh, he's a fucking
idiot.
Or
laughing.
Yeah. A specific item.
Oh, when he jumped off that thing and fell on his head. He's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you never know. But I mean, that's still kind of funny.
Well, when you think about Shia LaBeouf, I'm pretty sure he's talking about him as a person.
Right.
Yeah, you never know.
It's not a leap.
Speaking of Lost.
Oh. Not mention Lost.
Guys, come on. Have you been watching The Leftovers? Because that's Damon Lindelof, who's, you know, my favorite dude from Lost.
Right, yeah. I have been watching it. Anybody else been watching it?
No.
What's that?
I know a little bit about it. Right.
Leftovers? Is that what's in my fridge right now or what?
There's billboards for it everywhere.
I have not seen one billboard.
It is a show on HBO. Wow. HBO, right?
Yeah, but you're in San Diego.
This is true.
That's not a real city.
We are the whale's vagina.
Wow.
So it's on HBO, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it's about like 2% of the world's population disappearing. So like, were they raptured? What happened to them? Mm-hmm. And what happens to the people that are left behind? And it's supposed to be mysterious. And
then they come back.
Oh, they come back?
Oh, they do.
Eventually, yeah.
Oh, I mean, is that a spoiler?
No.
Okay.
It's only two episodes in.
Aliens?
Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe by the time this airs, it'll be three episodes by the time this airs.
Okay. So, but you've been watching it and you are loving it?
No.
Oh.
I'm not. And the funny thing about this is that I know why you aren't watching it and you were so venomous about it when I said I was watching. I think your exact thing was, I'll tell you why on the podcast. And I was like, whoa. So I looked it up and I saw
Damon Lindelof.
I was like, oh, duh.
Yeah.
But to your credit, I'll say this. I'm intrigued by the story. I'm intrigued by what they've done so far because the first episode is pretty interesting about how they go about, you know, the disappearances are pretty cool. It's just, it's very cookie cutter.
Yeah.
When you hear the story, when you picture the story in your head before seeing it, and then you see that first episode, it happens exactly as you picture it. And I kind of wanted it to happen better than I pictured it, you know? And the performances to me right now are not good.
Hmm.
They're just not. It's, yeah. So I don't know what everyone's raving about.
Well, I mean, and I promise we won't go into Lost, I swear.
Do not.
I think it hasn't been a secret that I'm not on the Lost bandwagon. And, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse were the two showrunners for the majority of that show. And so not only that, but Damon Lindelof also wrote Prometheus. So, I mean, I think at this point in time, I don't trust him and I'm not going to follow anything that he does. So, I mean, someone would really have to be at the end of the show saying that was the most brilliant thing I've ever seen, and I've had to hear it from a lot of people for me to even start it.
You know, I haven't seen the show. I haven't even heard of it. But the way Blaine describes it is, have you guys ever heard of Flash Forward? Did you guys ever watch that?
Yeah, I remember that. Everybody passed out or something?
Yeah, I love the concept of it, but the execution was, like, horrid. The acting sucked. I
was kind of intrigued by
it. Intrigued, and that's why I kept with it, because I wanted to see where the story was going, and... it was gone.
Doesn't Leftovers have a pretty good cast, though? I feel like it had a good cast.
Frank Hart, Michael Gaston, which is kind of cool.
Oh, Christopher Eccleston.
Yes. Yeah, Christopher Eccleston, Justin Theroux, Liv Tyler.
So it's a good cast.
No, that's the problem. That's why I'm surprised by it. Like, it's got a pedigree, you know? But it's just, I don't know. It's almost like M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong's behind it. That's seriously what it felt like to me. I'm like, I'm waiting for the twist.
It's not quite satisfying?
No. And the performances. There's something weird with the performances. The acting is not what you expect from these people.
I think Ding Dong's got a new story, TV series coming out, by the way.
Great.
So it's like M. Night Shyamalan Last Airbender as opposed to M. Night Shyamalan Sixth Sense?
No, like M. Night Shyamalan. What's the one about the killer plants?
Oh, The Happening. That's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
That's what the performances remind me of. They're very cardboard.
One of the worst movies ever.
And I won't say this isn't as bad as The Happening.
More alcohol. That
all right. I think it's time for another drink.
Gone at the pod thingy.
So I know we want to get to the 4DX conversation and Planet of the Apes conversation.
It's going to be a huge conversation.
Thank you for spraying all over me, Tracy.
That's what she said.
It's on the board.
Shut the front door.
Go!
I like dinosaurs.
That's what she said.
I already used that one.
Yeah. Oh, damn it.
Sloppy seconds.
That's how I like it.
Once
you get past the first inch, it's all new.
So,
what? Oh, God. Whoa.
Did we go there?
Wait, what does that even mean?
Is that a new thing?
I just said it.
I don't even want to talk about it.
I've never even heard that.
I don't know what it means.
I feel like I need a shower after hearing
that. Wow. That's an advocate for sloppy seconds.
I don't get it.
I feel like I want to delete that whole section from my brain.
Me too. I was in a car alone with you earlier.
Right. Oh, you liked it.
So much information. I feel like we should start talking about the 4DX experience. And for people who don't know what this is, it's like 3D plus D-box seats.
On steroids.
Plus steroids.
Plus acid.
And rain.
Plus
and
an
wind.
Amusement park.
Yeah, it's supposed to be immersive cinema, basically. So we went down to the Regal Cinema at LA Live and
downtown Los Angeles,
Staples Center.
Point.
Yeah, and it is at this point in time, it is the only 4DX theater in the nation. There's a bunch of others throughout the world. It's growing very quickly, this 4DX thing, and people around the world seem to love it.
And we did it on purpose because we really wanted to kill two birds with one stone.
We wanted to experience it. We wanted to see the Apes movie.
It's like an exclusive here we've got.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many podcasts have done this.
This is only the second movie that's played in that. Yeah. The Transformers was the first. This is the second that they've had in that theater. Just to give a little bit of an overview, you've got the moving seats. The seats move in three different directions, and they're very, very mobile. Mm-hmm. There is other mechanisms in your chair that kind of almost massage your back.
Like punch you in the back.
Punch you in the back in a nice way.
Plus the tickler.
The tickler
was my favorite part.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a tickler between your legs. And
between your feet.
Okay, between your feet.
And she's not French.
And there's water effects both from above and from in front of you that you can turn off. There are air effects that blow in your face, and as well as atmospheric wind effects all over the theater.
Fog.
There's fog effects.
And mist.
Smell.
There's scent effects. There are strobe effects throughout the theaters. There's like 20 different things altogether.
Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Yeah, bubbles.
Which we didn't see.
We did not experience that in Apes because there were no bubbles in the Apes movie.
No water. Underwater.
Anyhow, it's just a whole bunch of atmospherics, and it's supposed to be like the next phase in cinema. So... we have not talked about this yet.
I think Tracy should go first because she's the only one who let out a single comment after when we were walking out of the theater. So right. I think Tracy should go first.
I said it was the most uncomfortable seats I'd ever sit in, but I don't know if I can go back to watching a regular movie again.
That's exactly what you said. Yeah.
Yes. I 100% diametrically disagree.
Me too. I'm right there with you.
Yep. Okay. So, Tracy, go ahead and start. Tell us what you think.
Oh, my God. Am I really the, like, holy shit.
You're going to get beat up, woman.
I had no idea.
You got pretty lips.
I think, for me, maybe it was a novelty thing, but every single time my seat moved, I had a huge grin plastered to my face. Every time something shot behind my ear, I kind of, like, yelped. I giggled a lot, even though
I was sitting next to her, so this is all true.
Even though people were, like, people and apes were, like, you know, falling down around me, I'm like, this is so great. But it was like, I don't know, I didn't like the fog. I thought that the fog machines were too loud, so it was like, and that was disruptive to me. It wasn't worth it to me until the fog machines are quieter. I think it's just, that's distracting. But for the most part, every single time like a little poof of air by my ear, I'd be like, oh. Every time like a raindrop would follow me, I'd be like, oh my God, this is so cool.
That's exactly why I didn't like it.
But my butt was so sore. Okay. Afterwards,
well, I think, look, go John. Let's go John. Sorry,
it's your birthday.
It's before I get into this, because you know I could rant. The let's all agree that those were the most uncomfortable seats we've ever sat.
Yes,
in. Okay.
Yes. So I think, especially after 3 hours in the car,
bar none.
They have like ridiculous. It's the it goes beyond lower lumbar support. It's like lower lumbar torture.
I mean that's how the effects have to be pulled off.
But,
apparently,
but on top of that, I get it. Like there's water effects, so you're you're on a substance or something where water can hit it and fall off and drain or whatever. But yeah, like, I mean, they could have done better than that. Obviously they can't put fabric because it would get moldy.
I just feel like those seats would, even beyond the experience itself, those seats would keep this from becoming a thing, because I wouldn't go back and sit in those seats for another 2 hours.
Well, I think
it was torture.
The biggest
they're plastic. They're big plastic chairs.
Well, there was no neck support. I had to put my sweatshirt behind my head.
Yeah. The biggest complaint for me was that, and I'm comparing this to D-Box.
Yeah.
And have all of you been in D-Box?
Yeah.
Or just, okay. Maybe Blaine. No?
Yes, no? No, I had not.
You had not. It is D-Box on steroids, and it was overused. The movement of the seats was my biggest issue. It was way overused for the scenes it was used in, and it was way too all over the place, and that's what it took me out of the movie.
And this is what I was going to say is that you know, back when surround sound was first coming out, there was this whole contingent of 70s directors that was like, cinema is not an immersive experience, it is a presented experience. And you sit in your seats, the darkness envelops you, and you watch a picture unfold, you watch a story unfold in front of you, and you lose yourself in it in that respect. Anytime you break that barrier, anytime you break out into the world of the theater, it disrupts that immersive experience. Rather than enveloping you, it disrupts it. And I felt like that was like, you know, I like surround sound, but for me, this was like, okay, I don't know. I wanted to talk about this before we talked about Apes, because I don't know how much I liked Planet of the Apes. Based on the fact that I was so distracted so many times
by everything else. Yeah.
There were times when not to give anything away, but there were times when there was pivotal action and it was meaningful, dramatic action that meant something. And instead of me being able to be moved by that dramatic action, my seat was going all over the place and there was things flying by my ears. And I was going like, can I turn this off now? Because I'm tired. Like, I just want to watch. The movie was good and I wanted to be in it.
As much as I enjoyed it, it did take me out of the movie.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was like being on a roller coaster. Blaine, but it did take me away from the story.
Blaine's going to write my name on the board again. But to me, this is much more suited for a Transformers movie.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Yeah. No, I think I think he's right there. Well, because it's like it's that whole brainless thing.
Okay. For me, it wouldn't have anything to do with it. It wouldn't work for a Transformers movie either. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And maybe I'm the only person on the planet who will feel this way.
Of the apes?
What's that?
Sorry, you said only person on the planet.
I wish I would have made that joke. Damn it.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Damn it.
No. I also did not like it. I did like the rain effects. I don't have a problem with the rain effects at all whatsoever.
The cool air. I thought the atmospheric air was kind of cool.
Here's where 4DX is awesome. Sweeping shots.
Agreed.
Sweeping shots that would circle around things. And by the way, that one time where Koba was on the tank and it was circling.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that scene was amazing. Sorry, that's the movie. But sweeping shots where you were floating, you were the camera. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
When you would come up on a cliff and the character was looking over and you looked over and I felt like I was going to fall off the cliff.
Yeah, that was good.
Amazing.
Too. Yeah.
That's where that excels.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. When an ape is getting pounded in front of me and I'm getting punched in the back, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
It doesn't.
And this
fit
is the problem I have with it. And this is where I get very literal about shit. Like, I like the idea of being submersed, you know, into a movie, but that's not it.
Right.
They didn't accomplish that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a conversation you and I had years ago about John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness, where it's, and again, totally literal. This is a movie about a dude who writes a book and people who read the book go crazy. And then at the end, the studio makes a movie. And when you go to see the movie, you go crazy. And the big twist is you are seeing that movie. Spoiler alert. But that movie does not work because you didn't walk out of that theater crazy.
Or did you?
Brain in the pan. I actually agree with you because I feel like for me it was the novelty of it. But if I were to see 10 movies in 4DX, I would get sick of that other stuff and I would just want those sweeping shots.
Well, and the reason why I brought up the Transformers, why it would work for Transformers, because I thought the preview for 4DX, you know, when they kind of sample it for you, worked best.
The preview was my favorite part.
They built it around that preview.
So this leads me to why it wouldn't work for Transformers either, is because like at the sorry to talk about Planet of the Apes, but at the end, when they're going through that thing, you know, that whole end set piece, and they're falling on different, you know, and you're feeling that, again, I'm not the fucking ape.
Right.
I'm watching it. Yeah. Why am I feeling that?
It was overused.
Shit? Well, that was
But see, and that's what, and that's how, yeah. like, I loved it when shit rumbled.
Yeah.
I loved that. Like,
in the car, when they went in the car. That
yeah,
was cool.
And you're doing, well, not even so much that. It was like when something went past,
you know,
and you got a blast of air, which, and I agree with you about that. I hated the fact that a bullet would go past you and it would be,
One time it scared the shit out of me.
Like you could hear Indiana Jones in Disneyland?
Yeah, you could hear the sound of the effect more than the effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? Not so much the technology itself, but the way it was utilized in the movie last night. It reminds me of back in the, I want to say, mid-90s, early 90s, in video production, there was this thing called the video toaster that came out. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
The video, but it had all these one. You know, it was like this cool transition when we were still doing AB roll systems and all these cool transitions. And I remember guys that got this video toaster, and it was like,
yeah,
Star Wipe, Blind Wipe.
Yeah,
and it's like you
went
just
crazy.
And it's like they just because they had these tools now, they use them every single time.
Well, it's like when you got the chrome filter,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like the break it out and use the hell out of it. And it's like, why did you just do a star wipe on an emotional scene? You know, like
right.
it doesn't make sense,
right?
And that's what I felt like last night. I was like, oh, you just want to pull out every trick at every opportunity.
But then even it was funny because like their strobe effects, sometimes they'd be great, and then all of a sudden you'd be like,
random.
Why wasn't there one right there? That
would
have been awesome.
Well, John, you brought
they did,
this
like,
up.
The rain. They did it in the beginning, and then they never did it again.
And well, John turned his water off like a third of the way through. I watched him. It was so funny because I was between Tracy and John, and at some point, John just kind of goes.
I think mine was out of water. I only felt a couple drops.
I felt it a lot.
I think my reaction was less about the water, which I really didn't mind, and more the idea that I really just wanted to watch the movie.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's my final point is that it just even when I would giggle out loud for something, I wasn't supposed to. The movie did not want me to do that.
Right.
And I would giggle out loud and go, I just missed something. And I didn't like that. And my final point is that
I thought that
second
last thing
final
was
point.
Well,
yeah.
No. This is part of my final point. is that the entire time last night while watching that, I kept thinking to myself, you know what? I want a fucking Movie Co. love seat with a little table and my tall ass IPA, and I want to be comfortable and I want to watch a movie. The reason why I go to a theater to watch a movie is to experience a movie with a big screen with people and enjoy it in that sort of environment. I don't do it to be on Star Tours, and I think that it's great for the. I'm not against this idea at all. I think the kids are going to love it, and that makes me feel like I'm like, you know, get off my my home theater lawn, you know.
Damn kids.
But I'm okay with that. Like, I'm glad we did that last night. I won't go again.
No,
I won't. I don't care what movie it is.
They need to find the balance of being more subtle. They are trying to play all the tricks. But one of the great things about the only movie I've seen in D-Box is Super 8. And the only time I really noticed it was during the train crash, and which was awesome. Well, it felt like I was in the middle of the train crash.
You need to, in my opinion, you need to have the creator of the film intimately involved in the atmosphere.
That's a great point. I go back to your experience with Gravity, where you went to go see it in D-Box, and it's subtle. It's the subtle things that will immerse you without taking out of the film. It's the jerky motions that really pull you out, and you're like moving, and your eyeballs are just not on the screen anymore.
Even the squirting on the face of the water at the times where it was just like, what? Wait, why did that?
When somebody took a swing at somebody, and you got the.
I know.
I was giggling like I was on a roller coaster.
Right. Yeah. But that's not the point.
But the movie didn't want you to do it.
Right. Exactly. I was giggling in the middle when people were dying.
I thought the best effect was when they were up on the bridge and like you feel the cold air, like you're up.
Yeah.
Like,
that was kind of cool. See, I like that too.
Soaring over California. California.
Right. Yeah, a little bit.
And one of the dumbest things is like when fucking one of the apes was on top of the bridge and he's like, with the machine gun. Maybe I just gave something away. And then that little back thing went boom. I'm like, why did I get shot? I didn't get shot.
Shit, I'm dead.
He's in front of me. How did I get shot in the back?
Did you have another final point or
a third final point, Blaine? We're on Blaine's 14th
final point. Give me a second. I think I'll think of one.
It's like Cher's farewell tour. It never really ends.
Or Kiss. Or The Who.
The Rolling Stones.
Or The Rolling Stones.
Do we want to give it a rating on a like 1 to 5?
For 40, not the movie.
Okay, I do have a final point.
Oh, geez. 14th final point. By Blaine.
And that was, I was almost disappointed when we left. I expected, what was his name, Roberto, who was very nice, our little 40X concierge, who I expected us to get grilled at the end.
Yeah, I did too.
I really did.
Yeah, me too.
I thought they were going to ask us questions. And it was. I was like, I wanted to see how we do this. We'd be like, we're doing a podcast about this.
We can't talk about it.
We can't talk about it. And watch them go, what?
By the way, we got some free shirts we're going to hand out.
Yeah.
For free to some podcast.
We'll throw them in next time we give away swag. We'll throw some 40X shirts.
We got some 40X shirts. Yeah, because we were so happy with it that we're going to give you our shirts.
Yeah, we're not wearing that shit.
Okay, so on either A, B, C, D, or F, let's do that. What
40X
rate?
Or the movie?
We haven't talked about the movie yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. I would say, for the kids, you're going to love it. For me, absolute zero.
So on A, B, C, or D, or F, and you give it a zero?
I'll give it a zero.
Wow.
For me, this is the technology needs to improve, I think. They need to integrate it more seamlessly, like John said, for the movie itself. I'm going to give it a C for this movie. I still think, like, if you can see this with Transformers, for whatever reason, you're going to get a lot more out of it. This is a ride technology. This is meant for movies that are ride. Oh. And whether or not you like Michael Bay Transformers, it's a ride.
Although,
I can see it making a Transformers movie watchable.
I can't see sitting in those chairs for 3 hours, though.
Well, minus an hour of Bay movie. So,
Tracy?
For an initial view, for me, with the novelty, I give it a B, but I wouldn't want to see every movie like it was for this one. I want to see it get more subtle in the future. So, but for a first initial trial, I give it a B.
So I'm kind of a little opposite of Hayden. I think that I think the technology is pretty darn good. I would give the technology a B+. I just, as far as a movie experience, I would give it a D, you know, or D-. But if something came out that was, it was like custom content that was supposed to be experienced in 4DX, much like going to see an IMAX movie at a, you know, the planetarium or wherever, you know, if it was like, hey, come and see this in 4DX, I think I'd be much more likely to do that than to go see the new drama or action or blockbuster and feel like that was going to be an immersive experience.
When I say the technology is not there, and as far as like these movies, is that you've been to Universal Studios, right? And you've done some of these theater rides where they purposely make the content adjust, where you're getting squirted by water, they got things in the seats moving on.
Yeah.
That technology seems more integrated properly.
Right. I don't think it's the technology. I think it's the content.
It's the content.
I totally agree, because the Transformers ride is easily my favorite ride on the planet.
That's awesome.
It's fucking amazing.
It's amazing.
But you're on a ride for 6 minutes.
That's true. Yeah, it's very limited in scope.
I would love to know what it costs to retrofit these theaters. Yeah. It's got to be just enormous. Monumental. And that brings down the size of the theater
and the amount, well, yeah, but then the ticket price is very high. It was $28 per person, yeah, to see it.
So, now, if, yeah, a monkey gave me a hand job during the movie, then I might go up to a B.
Oh, dear Lord.
He actually said
the monkey.
The monkey
is going to throw poop at you.
I don't understand.
God.
You're weird, dude.
If you would have said hooker, we would have laughed.
Well, but the movie was about monkeys.
But a monkey.
This is, a monkey is very, yeah, strong. You might pull your wiener off.
We've gone way,
if you can find it,
way off the rails. Let's talk about the movie, because we've got very little time. Everyone's seen Rise, the first movie with James Franco, mm-hmm, and everyone liked that one.
I would say I was pleasantly surprised, minus Franco.
I didn't want to see it until I saw the trailer for Dawn.
Okay.
And then I went back and watched Rise three fucking times. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, and my only complaint with the whole movie was the early CGI with Caesar, which was awful.
Yep.
And James Franco.
So, I didn't mind James Franco.
Oh, God. He's so bad.
Such a piece
he's
of cardboard
so bad
in that movie.
And I like him.
Look, you're a bad actor if you're getting out-acted by CG.
Well,
I felt
except that it's Andy Serkis.
That's true. I mean, true. And Caesar is the best part of that movie.
Oh, yeah. God. And then Dawn, except for being pulled out of it, I'm going to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
Dawn did the same thing that Rise did, which shocked me. I didn't think it was going to do it. I thought it would pull like an Empire Strikes Back, but it didn't. It's just as much of a slow burn as Rise is.
Agree.
It's this slow, and by slow, I just mean intense,
methodical,
brewing, yeah,
deliberate storytelling
thing that just happens in front of you and you can't take your eyes off it. I really, really dug it.
However great Caesar was, as in my opinion, as a character in the first movie, he just gets better in this next movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would like to say I'm very mixed on this movie. Again, the problem I had with the first one, and actually it was a bigger problem in this movie than the first one. I didn't like James Franco in the first one, but I felt the supporting cast was a lot better. And of course, you're at the origin story, so you're kind of getting the connections with ape and human and everyone else. And this one,
there was a great supporting cast.
Yeah, in this one, they throw a new set of humans at you. They try to get you to connect with them, and I thought Jason Clarke was a bigger piece of cardboard than Franco was.
Oh, I completely disagree with that.
All he did was look doughy-eyed with his crazy blue eyes.
Oh, I thought he did a great job.
He was
an emotional actor.
That scene under the tower was, which was a direct reflection of the ape.
Yeah. I loved that.
And I'm a Carrie Russell fan from way back from
I thought
Mickey Mouse
she
Club.
Did nothing for me either. It was not enough human.
I was expecting more Gary Oldman.
He was okay.
He was great, but I was expecting
it's
more.
It's just, it wasn't, it was a new set of humans.
Again,
for
there's
very
hardly
limited
any
time,
humans in
and
it.
And it's very limited time, but I just felt like they were trying to get you to feel for both sides, right? I mean, it's obviously an ape movie.
Well, they...
But they try to get you in a little bit on the human aspect.
No, that's the greatest part about it, is that through most of that movie, there's no bad guy.
There is no bad guy.
And that's the hardest part, because you know it's going to blow up in your face.
But they want you to struggle with both sides. They want I didn't feel the struggle, though, on the human side. I felt the apes out-acted the humans. Again,
I felt like the apes were the best part of that movie, but I definitely disagree with you on the humans. I felt like they did a lot with the little time that they had on screen. I felt they conveyed a lot of emotion.
Mm. Even the two goofy guys were fantastic.
I thought everyone played a really nice, and I was actually... I was pretty impressed with Jason Clarke.
Yeah,
because I don't really know him.
Me either.
Outside
he's gonna
of
be in the new Terminator.
And,
yep. You
know, and I was like, wow, this guy does a lot with a little.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like he's a weird choice movies. For Terminator. We were talking about it last night. It's like very, very bizarre. But I really liked him because I felt like he genuinely cared.
He had to convey a lot with his facial expressions as opposed to lying.
Exactly.
And he did.
But I didn't see any facial expression. He was always like. Like deer in headlights to me.
No.
I did not get that at all.
Not to me.
I did not connect with the humans in this movie at all.
I guess agree to disagree on that.
Yeah.
Because I really liked all the performances. And I think it's a crime that Andy Serkis gets overlooked again and again and again, because that guy has done some amazing things.
And I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
The special effects were insane.
Okay, the special effects are... Well, again, we watched a cartoon last night, but you forget that you're watching a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I also love that so much that the movie became kind of almost a silent movie.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that so much is conveyed in just looks and...
I didn't really think about that, but that's absolutely accurate. Like, it almost was a silent movie. And by the way, subtitles in 3D, awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I really kind of dug? I don't know if you guys noticed it at all, because I pick up on scores and soundtracks. Did you get a little bit of the old school Planet of the Apes with kind of the more the lighthearted, like, you know,
I didn't know.
There was a little bit of the
that weird 70s.
You
know what's funny about that is when it happened, I was like, this is a very interesting choice. But that's true. That was kind of straight out of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I like that.
When I see it again, I'll have to pay attention. Yeah. It was Michael Giacchino, who I think is brilliant. But you know,
and I do love that they use the same title treatment.
Again, I feel like, you know, there were moments in the movie where I felt like I should have been feeling something, and instead my seat was whipping me all around, and totally there were lights flashing in my face and the water dripping on my head.
I want to let's go together down the street and see it at the $2 theater.
Seriously, that's how I feel like I need to do it.
Yeah,
just in a very conventional theater.
I want to.
So I mean, we don't want to go too much further because we don't want to spoil anything. But thumbs up, thumbs down, ABC,
thumbs up, yeah, way up.
Diagonal sideways up. I'm halfway between thumbs up and sideways.
In The Gladiator, that meant thumbs down. I know, it's your favorite movie.
Like this way?
No, from the guy who likes Transformers.
And the guy who loves Gladiator.
Hey, you know what?
Gladiator.
You know what?
Actually, I did too.
The apes, this is all about the apes. And they take out most of the movie, so that's fine. But yeah. I mean, I just felt the human element was not there.
Interesting. All right, well... I would say it's worth seeing and making up your own mind.
Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap it up a little bit. I write supernatural thrillers. You can find me at johnmulhall.com. That's johnmulhall.com.
And Tracy, you can find me at hotnerdgirl.com, facebook.com/hotnerdgirl.
And Hayden over at geekoutlaw.com, geekoutlaw@outlook.com.
What? I'm Blaine. You can find me at iBlaine at both Facebook and Twitter. Thank you.
So next week we have our first special guest on the show.
Yay.
Nice. Yes.
We are welcoming Ivan Van Norman, who is one of the fierce competitors from the first season of King of the Nerds. So King he will be nerds. Here nerding out with us next week.
By the way,
so,
what's our email?
geeks@podthingy.com. In a episode coming up, we're going to be doing a reader mailbag segment. So send your emails in now. One more drink to get us on the road.
This has been an episode of Pod Thingy. Join us next time for more geekery and nerdism.